Now arriving downtown Santa Monica Station.
Hey, Adam. It's time for Notes on Your Notes.
Hi, this is Adam Lesser. Welcome to Notes on Your Notes. What you're about to listen to is the extended, very long conversation that Josh and I had about discipline and the role it plays in being an artist. If you want the quick version, you should go back and listen to the short version of the discipline episode, which should be right next to this episode on your feed. Sometimes Josh and I just turn on the recorder and talk, and it's a very different kind of conversation than our normal episodes because we're really just exploring ideas and trying to get at the truth of what we're trying to communicate. This is a chance to experience that. Also, a little bit unusual about this episode is that we actually took a 3-week break and recorded the second half of the episode later. The reason we did that is that Josh decided he would try 21 days of structured writing, which is not typically how he works. So you get a chance to see someone like Josh who doesn't typically keep that kind of discipline, experiment with that kind of discipline. We hope you enjoy it, and let us know if you would like to hear more of these unstructured conversations. And let us know if this is the type of content you'd actually like to hear. A lot of times, it's a different kind of conversation that happens when Josh and I just turn on the mics. So you can reach us at notesinyournotes@gmail.com. Enjoy.
Adam.
Yes.
You know what I hate?
Uh-oh. Am I in trouble?
No, it has nothing to do with you.
Okay.
I hate the one-size-fits-all approach to writing.
Explain.
So there's people out there that say, okay, you want to be a writer?
Yeah, I want to be a writer.
Okay, then write. You know, then you, like, you put your timer on for like 4 hours, and then you grind out 4 hours worth of writing a day, every day for like 10 days. You know, I mean, okay, that may work for some people. It's not my style. And, it's like, that's not my vision of what an artist is.
This is a juicy topic, Joshua.
I feel it is.
Because there are a lot of people who disagree with you.
That's fantastic. And they can disagree with me. And they can also, you know, sit down.
Including
a
small part of me.
Okay. Well, that small part of you can have a lovely time sitting down at a desk and writing for 4 hours at a time every day as part of their discipline. So what I'm going to advocate is all of it. So I'm not saying no to that, but I'm just saying as that is a one-size-fits-all, it's like boot camp. It's brutal. It can be demoralizing for some people. And I feel that one of the most important things is getting to know yourself as an artist / writer and what supports you.
I think it's about rhythm and returning and being in process. Mm-hmm. But I do think there's something about the commitment to the process that matters.
Well, I feel like one of the things I want to offer on this show is to help people with A, self-awareness, that's the most important, and tapping into who you are and what do you need to produce your best work? I feel like that's really important. And then to have an array of tools and techniques that are supportive of you long-term, not just like, you know, a carrot or a stick.
Yeah. And that requires thinking broadly. I know what you're talking about. So it means that if you feel inspired by certain neighborhoods in your city or by going to an art gallery alone one day a week, that you sort of build that into your life so that you sort of resource yourself to continue to create. If when you're stuck, you have at your computer, if you have a system of... sometimes the word, I don't like the word drill, but there's a very famous Mary Oliver poem. I believe it's Wild Geese. It could be the journey, but one of them, it was her, a student came up to her after class and said, I don't understand why, like, why you're asking me to write a poem as one sentences. And she's like, what do you mean? She's like, let's do it right now. So they sat down and they wrote, you know, let's just do this poem. Mm-hmm. And that poem is probably one of the most important poems of the 20th century.
Wow.
And so what did that come from? That came from, she had an exercise that she was going to do that she went to. Mm-hmm. So I think people, what I'm pointing out is, like, I agree. I think people build systems into their life, whether it's downtime to regenerate, whether it's...
But see, here's the point, is that people don't. And that's what I want. That's what I want to help people with. Like, I feel like people look to a book or a approach that worked for somebody else, and they try to manipulate that or put that on top of them. And I would like people, artists, to define and redefine their own creative process with an array of tools and techniques, and ones they even make up on their own, that support their individual process in the long arc, but also project by project. Like this guy, I love this, the story that you gave about the guy who, like, locked himself in a cold room, wouldn't turn on the heat, right? And so maybe it's a story about Antarctica, I don't know. But, you know, it's like, maybe that was feeding him for that project, and only that project, and he devised it for that project. And I go, wow, that's fantastic. Yeah. And then maybe if you're writing about, you know, someone who's in Hawaii or whatever, then you might have to go to Hawaii and do a month's worth of research, whether you like it or not. But what I'm saying is that there's tools and techniques and processes for the individual as the artist, and also for that's unique to the project, and to look at both of those and to have a larger palette.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what you're asking people is to at least consider what might be a good process for you, rather than this sort of top-down disciplinary approach, which says, I'm going to get up at 5 and before work from 5 to 9, I'm going to write for 4 hours, and that's going to produce this. And I do know people who have taught writing long-term who have said, yeah, I get people who come to my class and they've written an enormous amount, but because they've never looked at how they write, because they've never looked at exercises and drills and sort of examined storytelling and had some sort of consciousness about it, they never get better. That's kind of not exactly what we're talking about, but it's a facet of it, which is that you have to be willing to stretch in different directions. Maybe that means not sitting at your desk, putting on music, lying on the floor with a notepad, and then seeing what you write in that situation.
Okay, you are exactly right on that, Adam, because the person who's going to be high discipline, who says, okay, I'm going to be a writer, I'm going to write every day from 4 a.m. to, like what you just said, you know, to 9 a.m. or whatever before he goes to work, is the very thing that's getting in the way of deeper exploration or making his work more profound. And yet he can do that. So his propensity would be to do that. And in some ways, it would be better for him not to do that. Or to get up at 4 in the morning and just sit there and just, like you said, listen to music and allow what comes out to come out in that same time frame.
Yeah, and or not. You know, there's a contemporary British writer whose name I'm blanking on right now, but, you know, his process is to wake up every morning with a notebook. He leaves all his electronics at home. He walks to a park and he sits and he jots notes in that notebook for 2 hours. Everyone works differently.
Yes.
But that person has at least thought through what's the best way for me to work. And there probably will come a time where that's not the best way for that person to work, and then he'll do something else.
Yeah, like when it snows.
Yeah. Or maybe that's the best time.
Yeah. But embracing that and celebrating the differences. Oh, geez, I'm sounding really corny here. Yeah,
but
really, and just not looking at a book and going, oh, okay, and just follow A, B, C.
And the thing about creativity is it's not linear. I think that's where this goes to, which is that in a world in which...
Okay, world.
No. If you want to learn to computer program...
Yes.
I literally... If you push 8, 10, 12, 14 hours with some breaks, there are issues with learning and rest in the brain and resting and sleep. But the more hours you put in, like, you're going to learn a programming language more quickly. And the reason I'm using programming is because it's such a linear way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's built into the way processors work. And I think, and you're pushing for a result. You want to build that web app. You want to do, you know, whatever you're doing. But that is not how a lot of creativity works. It's not that we don't have to put in hours in the creative process. It's just that it's not a straight line.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it's sometimes, and thinking about it differently is, I think, helpful.
So let's go back to nature, because I'm so into what you're talking about right now.
Right.
If about the straight line concept, because a straight line puts us back into the industrial age. It has to do with conveyor belts and things being in boxes, right? So then this is actually what happened. They were doing some logging up in God knows where, right? And back in the day. And one of the ways they got the logs, the trees, down to wherever they got processed was by going down a river. And rivers, you know, make those S shapes.
Sure.
And so the logs were going down the S shapes, and they were flowing, but it was kind of slow. So an efficiency expert came along and said, let's make a trench and make it a straight line so they can get down there faster. Well, that straight line kept bottlenecking all the time, and it turned out to be slower in end result than the natural S curve. And that's what we're talking about. Which is, the creative process is an S-curve. And if you're going to do a linear, a non-creative process that's industrialized, then yeah, you can do a conveyor belt.
I agree. And I'll say one other thing, which is that I am sometimes personally jealous of people who can just keep those hours, but it's not an effort. I think there are people... I know a lot of professional screenwriters are like this, where... it's just they get up and they work like 7 to 1 p.m. They take the afternoon off, and then they work from like 5 p.m. to like 11 p.m. They're putting in a lot of hours. It's easy for them. It's not like they're pushing themselves. That's just where they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
That personality type is fascinating to me, because first off, you assume that it's pretty productive. And most of the people who work like that are very productive. At least they produce a lot of scripts.
Mm-hmm.
The quality of that and the depth of that is a different question. But I would say that for those people, it's just what they, like, that's right for them.
Which goes back to that thing of awareness, right? Self-awareness. And if you work within your own self-awareness... But then you also have to do that stretch, like we talked about, right? If you're so good at being dogmatic or highly structured, then you need to stretch yourself in another way. Self-awareness so that I can show up and do my best possible work. And it's not about always hitting growth cycles either, because that's also, if we always go back to nature in its most basic form, a tree does not, under normal circumstances, produce fruit 24/7, 365. And so if we're trying to produce fruit 24/365, if we can do that, there's a price to pay later.
I wonder about that. Yeah. I wonder for them, about people who go back to that well every single day, year after year, year after year. What happens to them? Because there are some, you know, you look at guys like people like John Irving or George Carroll Oates or even Eric Roth, the screenwriter. Wow. Like every couple years they're producing book after book after script after script after, you know, and like, I don't know if they just came into this lifetime with an enormous amount of creative energy.
Mm-hmm.
But I know from myself that it's dangerous to necessarily believe that that's the standard you have to work to and to push towards that, particularly when there are, who wrote Fat Ceti? Oh, Leonard, what's his name? Oh, I hate it. Anyways, particularly when a book like Fat Ceti, which
a lot of, you know, it's not that red, but it was a John Huston movie got made into it, but it's a masterpiece. And it was the only book he ever wrote. Mm-hmm. He wrote it in his mid 30s. He felt he was done. He had one book in him. That's what he wrote. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of an interesting story because it was incredibly well received at the time. And then he didn't write anything afterwards. And everyone kept pushing him, like, when are you going to write your next book? When are you going to write books? And he said, you know, sometimes you just only win one championship. Mm-hmm. He didn't have any interest in writing another book. Mm-hmm. And I just sometimes think about it. It's like, and I think he went to work for like Stephen Bochco and like some of those big TV writers in the 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. But I think it comes down to the pressure sometimes we feel to always be producing. Mm-hmm. And the guilt people feel when they're not producing. Mm-hmm. And that's rather than taking a perspective that says, what stories am I excited about telling right now? What feels alive for me? Mm-hmm. And if I'm in a long form project and I feel stuck, how do I find new tools to explore it from a new angle to make it exciting again?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Because everyone I know who goes through long form projects, and I think it gets easier as you do more of them because mm-hmm. you have faith that you're going to finish, but they all go through this period of all this material, it's not there, and they don't know how they're going to find their way out. They don't know how they're going to write to the end. And it's a really scary place to be, particularly because usually you're staring at a 6, 12, 18 month investment of time.
Yeah.
And that's where I feel like there's a lot to be gained from having sort of curious ways of dealing with the process. And mm-hmm. like, even if it's just talking through your story ideas with a friend, you know, which is often what is needed if you're at that spot, but it's having strategies and tools for staying in process.
Yeah.
Which suggests we should do a show
on that
top 10 strategies and tools for staying. Sounds like a bad blog post.
Right. But we need that because the one size fits all model, I feel, is squelching creativity, or at the worst and at the best, you know, being ineffective. And again, I'm gonna go back to self-awareness, because the self-awareness aspect is you know, what am I, or who am I, or what is this project? If I'm a lemon tree, you know, I produce lemons for like 8 months out of the year. You know, every year like clockwork. If I'm an avocado tree, I only produce like 2 times a year. And every 7 years, an avocado tree will not produce any fruit for a whole year. Mm,
did not know that.
Yeah. So are you an avocado tree? Are you a lemon tree?
My parents actually have an avocado tree, so I should pay more attention to this.
Well, it's a 7-year cycle, so it's easy to get lost. But yeah, you might go, oh, okay, this is my 8th year. I get it. It's time for a little break.
Yeah. Or isn't it blueberry bushes where they don't produce berries till like their 6th year or something?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Cacao trees, you have to have a cacao tree, I think about 6 years, 4 to 6 years old before they start producing their first fruit.
So I think what I would leave people with is
what kind of tree are you? What kind of tree are you?
I feel like a shrub.
I'm a shrub. A shrub.
I feel like more like a shrub. Flowery shrub.
Are you a perennial?
Would be this. Think about what your process is. If you feel like you're disciplining yourself and it's painful, that's a sign that you should rethink how you work and if there's a better way. And you should experiment with processes to make yourself more creative and to produce a variety of different mm-hmm. types of work. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we'll do a show about different strategies for accessing your deepest creative expression. Particularly, mm-hmm. I think, for people who are either burnt out or working on long-form projects where it's much more of a problem.
Or they're having a hard time starting.
You know, a lot of people, that's true.
Yeah.
People can't start.
You know, and also I want to invite everyone listening to go ahead and email us or post to us, somehow get to us this information of what works for them.
That would be wonderful.
And then we can go through the list figure out the best top 10 or 15 that keep coming up. You know, we'll even give you credit on our show, you know. Yeah.
You can reach us at notesonyournotes@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. That's notesonyournotes@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you.
Yeah.
Hey, driver, when the guy's going like, if I don't write for 5 hours a year, I'm not really a writer.
All right, so we thought we were done with this show, but then we turned off the mic and Josh wouldn't stop hammering at me.
Yeah, man.
So this is what happened.
Brutal.
Yeah. Josh is like, he seems like this nice guy on the podcast. Anyways, this is where the conversation went. I'm going to say the following. Personally, I have a prejudice against people who talk about doing something and don't do it. Not like I hate them, but more like I'm like, just do it. Even if it's bad, it's better to do it than not talk. Now, the first person who I direct this venom at is myself. And I would just say when I am not writing, I feel a little bad about myself, you know? Like I can live with myself writing and it being bad. I can't live with myself not writing and thinking about how I should be writing. And do I think this is a healthy way to live your life or a good way to live your life? Not necessarily. And is it divorced from the joy I feel at times when I'm truly sort of unearthing something new and creative from myself? No, it's not. That's a totally different thing. I sometimes feel that creating the rhythm of having a writing rhythm creates the opportunity for me to have that moment. Now, this, my, you know, confession arose within a larger context of a conversation in which Joshua was talking about basically the fact that everyone can be an artist, and being an artist is a way of viewing the world,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Not necessarily what you produce creatively. Is that fair, or am I mischaracterizing?
Right. So it's an artist's sensibility will influence my perception of the world, and then that expression will take a certain form. And that expression has a wide variance, and it's based on the five physical senses most of the time. And the only part about that is that, see, it goes back to that thing about producing, right? So it's like if there's a cause and effect that I can perceive within the time frame that I've you know, given it, bequeathed, that, you know, my expectations are met, then that's okay. But if that goes outside that time frame continuum that my expectations are forcing it upon, then it's not okay. And so who's to say that you know, you need to take in for 6 years or 8 years or 12 years before you're going to produce something? We don't know.
Yeah, I'm not saying you're not right. And the example you used was Mike Myers, who apparently took a long period of time off before he did Austin Powers. And after, I guess it must have been between SNL and when he did movies. I don't know exactly the story, but there are people who have taken a lot of time off, and out of that period of downtime came really great work. What scares me is just that if you're going to take that amount of time off and walk away,
mm-hmm.
It should feel really right. You shouldn't be bothered. Like, you should be working.
But where does that bother come from? Does that come from, you know, conditioning, parents, you shoulda, coulda, woulda? Or does that come from a place of deep knowing?
It's a great point. At this point, I've been...
Because it comes out of your neurosis, or it comes out of you being supportive of your creative process?
I think the question is also, how do you deal with those moments where you just feel like you don't want to write anymore? You don't want to create anymore. And it's okay to have those moments, even if sometimes it doesn't feel okay.
Yes. It's that demand.
I just don't want to give people a license to like check out for like 4 years and talk about all the great ideas they have and not do them. Like, that's not cool. That's
totally
a recipe for regret.
I totally get it. I'm 100% supportive of that. And some people need free passes. Some people need to get that little hall pass that it's okay to take the day off and go to the beach, right? And other people need the opposite. They go like, hey, no free passes for you. You need to like stay in that room for another 3 hours.
You've got to know when that desire not to write is some other psychological issue, like fear of failure. Mm-hmm. Like, it's usually fear of failure or believing you have no more good ideas, or, you know, just be careful of that, you know, because then you wake up in 5-10 years down the line and it's like, you know, it's like execution's everything. Like, you know, ideas are cheap, and it's only really that you learn about yourself and about creativity and about producing even by being in it, by being like, you know, like in the process. And that's like, I still struggle with just hanging out in it. Just be like,
I see. So, okay. So here's the thing is, are we dropping out or are we staying in process? Meaning staying with ourselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the external shifts, but I still stay in touch with myself. That's the difference. In other words, I can work on something and then I'm going to drop out, which means I'm going to retreat. I'm going to go back and then I'm going to go numb, if you will, or rebuild or whatever. But then I've dropped out of the process. But if I can do a thing, it's an internal shift. If I can do a thing where I'm working on something and then regenerate, but I'm still in my process, and then I go back the next day or the next week, or Mike Myers, it took him like a year or two in terms of his depth of needing to be re-nourished, then when he comes out better, stronger, and everything else. But if I'm just doing it as a way to hide or protect or shield, then I'm no really longer in that process.
And that's a really fine line.
It is.
And you have to be very self-aware to know that.
Self-awareness is key. And that's one of the things of an artist. That's one of the hallmarks of an artist.
Yeah, and I think the way this often manifests it is just, I guess I see it from another way, which is that people are just, you know, once they get 3, 4, 5, 10, 15 scripts, books, short stories, collections into their career, they feel like they have to just do the next one. And even though they're kind of mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. they're mm-hmm. tired, mm-hmm. they're really tired. That's how sometimes it pops up.
This process does not stop. In fact, in anything, it exacerbates as you get more successful. Because now you have more people, more pressure. That are Lady Gaga gave that famous speech about like, I didn't want to sell soda. I didn't want to sell stuff. And her handlers and her agents and everyone else is making a lot of money when she says yes, right?
I'm trying to be compassionate for Lady Gaga right now. I'm struggling.
It's not about Lady Gaga at that point. At that point, it's not about Lady Gaga. It's about her agent, her manager.
I understand that.
All of their family. Right? So when she says no to whatever, not only will she not make $10 million, but her agent doesn't make...
I got you. Like, there's a very small group of people I would say probably less than 500 of artists in this world who are making that kind of money where they're under those kinds of pressures.
But it's about staying true to yourself. I'm going to go to someone else. This guy named Pavarotti, right? An opera singer back in the day.
Right.
At the height of his career, he took several years off to retrain his voice. Up until that point, no one in recorded history had ever done that. To have an established career as an opera singer in the world, and then literally, I think was he in his late 40s, early 50s? And he took a couple of years off and did that for himself, and then came back stronger and continued his career.
I think the theme is regeneration, and maybe that's where the conversation ends up, which is like, and this is congruent with a nature analogy. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily about, as you say, stepping out and just stopping. It's more about, like, if you're feeling like you're pushing and you're stuck and it's, you're banging your head against the wall. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a lot of, like, I have a friend who's written like 10 scripts, and sometimes he feels like he's banging his head against the wall to find new ideas to write about. Mm-hmm. You know, he's written a lot of stories at that point. And what came up for me in that conversation was just like regeneration. And that's what you're saying, is it's mm-hmm. not that you leave process. Mm-hmm. It's that you acknowledge that you're burnt mm-hmm. and that you need to regenerate. And that means usually taking time away, sometimes in new environments, or just being a Joe Blow every day, washing dishes, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But giving space to find something new inside yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because the baseline is, I'm an artist who is using this medium as a way to self-express. And if I'm an artist, that means I need to be in touch with myself and my process, as opposed to a technician or a journeyman or a craftsman.
Sure.
Which is only externally based. I want to bring up something else.
Okay.
What if the art wasn't art? What if the art was money?
Explain. You mean like, what if the art you're producing is because it's a paycheck?
What if the art, what if we're not looking at artists anymore? Let's say we measure an artist. Let's say we measure a writer by that he produces one book a year. Let's just make that up. Okay.
Okay.
And he's been doing that for 20 years. So he has 20 books. Okay. So now we're going to assign this same thing to another guy who makes $5 million a year. And he does that for 20 years. So he has $100 million? Okay. He has $100 million. He doesn't need to go to work the next day. He has $100 million. So why does he show up?
I mean, you have to ask him. Some people show up because in terms of money, they feel like they always need more. Some people show up because they genuinely like the work. And so it's not about the money. It just depends.
And I'm going to venture to say it's the same thing about artists. Somehow it's easier to see with money and less apparent with art. But when you start getting to that level, then you start really exploring, what is it that I'm actually showing up for?
I see your point. So your point is, like, you need to know if you're showing up because you like the work, or if you're showing up because you want to produce the next book, aka the next $5 million, because you're super attached to productivity and growth for the sake of productivity and growth.
Exactly.
Because there's always more.
Yeah, there's always more. And that seed, whatever you find out there after 20 years, is going to be the same in year one. That will not change, because that's the driver of the person.
Well, I mean, I think it shifts over time.
Mm-mm, it doesn't. I mean, at least not my experience. My experience is that it doesn't make a difference if someone's doing it for personal gain in day one. They're still going to be doing it for personal gain in day 20. If someone's doing it from an altruistic perspective, then on day 20, on year 20, they're going to be doing it from an altruistic perspective.
I know people who love both the work and the rewards. Some like one more than the other.
I'm talking about the driver. I'm talking about what makes the person show up in the first place, which has to do with character, by the way. But yeah, but you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, you're talking about their motivation for why they want to be an artist, and why they not just want to be an artist, but why they create. Mm-hmm. And you're saying some people create for the outcomes and the rewards, and some people create because they love creating. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, because if I think about myself, I love creating, and when I'm not writing, it's usually I'm miscreating.
Yeah.
That said, I think like having rewards for your work is pleasant.
But
makes life a lot easier.
Right. It's pleasant, but it's not your driver.
It's not my core driver, no.
Right. And that's what we're looking at.
Like,
right
I
now.
Would, I think the measure sometimes is like, I would be doing this no matter what.
Yeah.
And we can't really conceive of this in America, where art is so commodified. But if you go to other countries where people are not getting rich from writing, or mm-hmm. from film, mm-hmm. or from music, mm-hmm. and talk to artists there, they're doing it because they want to do it. Like, but there's no like, when you're in some small African country, you're not going to get rich.
Yeah.
And so,
or even in socialized countries, you know, where they don't have to survive. They don't have to.
Are you talking about like Sweden?
Yeah.
Where like there's universal basic income or mm-hmm. whatever. So mm-hmm. you're not going to die.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if Sweden has universal basic income, but they seem to take care of their people pretty well.
A more of a socialized situation. Socialist. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, that's fair. I think I agree. That's fair. I mean, I would agree with that assessment. I think a corollary of that is be wary of if you get into whatever your art form is, if you got into it because you like the idea of being a painter, an artist, a musician, you liked, like there's some image in your head that it would be cool to perform in front of all these people, you know, like if you don't actually enjoy and are passionate about the work, it's going to get hard.
Yeah.
What's interesting to me is that I do read a lot about people who say they don't necessarily like doing it. Just read Leonard Cohen's biography, and he often talks about how hard and difficult he finds the process. He doesn't always enjoy it.
What part of the process did he not enjoy?
Well, there was a moment in which he writes a letter to his literary editor, you know, and he said, who was rejecting a book that he wrote. I can't remember. And he says, you know, just, you know, this is a really hard for me. I don't always enjoy doing this. I work incredibly hard at this, but it's not always pleasant, the process itself. Now, he's sort of interesting because he was someone who was extraordinarily content to sit alone and write music in his room for days and not see people.
Yes.
So I have to think that there was another component of it for him. And maybe his approach to music was different from his approach to writing books, which is two different things.
And his approach to performing, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even that, you know, Suede, he was very, very reluctant to perform. And, you know, he went to live in a monastery for a number of years at the end of his life. And then his manager stole most of his money. And when he was well into, I think, his early 70s, he had no choice but to go on tour again. And he really didn't want to do it. And I think the first show he played was this tiny town in like Saskatchewan in like Canada, small town.
Wow.
And he was nervous. He didn't want to do it. And it turned into like this crazily successful tour. And he ended up touring for, I think, a couple of years.
Yeah.
Maybe even longer. And he eventually came to enjoy it. So, you know, it's...
I saw two of his shows live.
Really?
And all I can say is, you know, that old saying, good luck, bad luck, who's to say? About, you know, all that money being stolen from him.
Yeah, he ended up making an enormous amount of money on those tours at the end.
And giving his gift, you know, to so many people, and I was blessed to see his live show twice.
Yeah.
And it's just, it still lives in my memory, and he's an amazing artist.
Right. And, yeah, I guess there is a question of what about people who, I guess, have a love-hate relationship with the work? I feel like that myself. I feel like sometimes I hate writing, sometimes I love writing.
See, I think that's fantastic. I think it's fantastic to have a love-hate relationship with anything, because then you have greater range. And you're saying, yeah, I love this right now, and yes, I hate this right now. It's like, people talk about, I'm not a parent, and people talk about parenting and all that, but I question the mother that always loves her offspring. It's not human. You know, sometimes you just want to strangle someone. And I think that's okay because of the depth of the relationship.
Yes. Well, I could say this. You can only have a love-hate relationship with something that's really intimate to you.
Yeah.
You have to care.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's a depth of caring. Yeah. You care so much, right?
Yeah.
I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's... Can you harness that energy?
Yeah.
God, I hate this, and I love that so much. God, I love this, and I love this so much, right? Both ends.
Love, hate.
Yeah, going into full acceptance of either extreme.
Yeah.
So what happened now is that Josh and I took 3 weeks, and Josh agreed to do 21 days straight of disciplined, structured writing practice. And if you're curious about how it impacted Josh and what his experiences were like, I think it's worthwhile to listen to the second half of this episode. So here it is.
So a few weeks ago, you and I had a conversation about structure and discipline, about how you got to write 6 hours a day, you got to wake up at 5 a.m., And you took offense to people who have highly structured, disciplined lives in their terms of their creative practice. I would say I took a little bit of the other end of that conversation. Mm-hmm. But I would say, I will give you credit, Joshua. You called me immediately. I think it was that afternoon and said, let's do a test.
That's right. I said, it's bugging me, man. It's bugging me.
Uh-huh. So you were willing to head out into the unknown and do 21 days of structured writing time every day, which is not how you usually work.
It's not how I usually work.
You thought you would. So this is less of a novelty for me than it is for you, but I'm going to tell you how what the experience was like for me.
Yes, please.
And we would also probably love at some point to talk to our listeners about them doing this experiment.
That'd be great.
To be clear, the experiment was we would write every day for a 21-day stretch for an hour a day.
Yes.
Joshua, tell me what happened.
Well, just to back up your story, I remember calling you, and it's bugging me, man. That means we have to, because it's bugging me, I thought we needed to do it. And it's not to say that I haven't done things of this ilk before. So what's interesting for me in that process is that because I'm in that milieu for 21 days, writing comes to me. Like, I cannot not write. So what that means is that I'm constantly making notes to myself and thinking about it, or knowing that I'm going to have a writing session later that day or the next day. And as things come to me, I make notes. And then when I sit down for my session, I put my timer on, and then I have so much to write too. And that was really inspiring, helpful, invigorating, all those things. And then just like anybody else, after about 10 to 12 days of that, the demand for more concentrated, streamline, through line, knitting it together starts to come up, you know, no matter what the project is, that call to go deeper. And I felt like that was an interesting process in terms of not mandating that my writing session has to be filled with me writing, you know, just a dedicated time to really looking at like what is next, what is being called forward, what do I need to address next in this process.
I just want to ask a question about that. Mm-hmm. So you got to a point where rather than just sit down and sort of write the next whatever scene or moment or whatever you're working on, mm-hmm. you know, rather than just continue working on a project, you felt the need to sort of stop and ask some questions either about character or about why you were working on a scene, like almost depth work that we would mm-hmm. maybe call note taking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I will just say a quick comment from me is just that I consider that writing. I don't consider that different from writing a scene in a script or writing another 700 words in a short story. Like I think of that as really important work, and most people I know do as well. I mean, John Irving is famous for spending like 18 months, which is with notebooks, before he writes a novel. So I feel like that process of depth work is actually a really important part of writing. It is writing, as is editing and rewriting.
Mm-hmm.
I was more curious about whether you found at all the daily need to write an hour confining, like whether you found that you had objections to that structure.
I didn't. I embrace programs like that just in general. I don't have a thing on it.
Then why are you so opposed to people who say that developing weekly structure and hours for people writing is a bad thing? What's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with it. It's the element of the grind. That's the part that I shouldn't say grind. because grind can be good too, right? Because grind is in reference to refinement. Maybe I'm looking at the thing of high austerity. Maybe I'm looking at the thing of feeling like a hair shirt, you know, and it doesn't... Hair shirt?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Self-flagellation.
Oh, okay.
And how we don't need to go down that road anymore as a culture, as individuals. It's not to say that you couldn't write 4 or 5 or 6 hours a day, and it's not to say that you can't be focused and have a strong practice, but if it's at the cost of putting yourself in a position that you don't feel it comes out of austerity, then it's like, you know, it's like, what's the point?
I think that's a good point. That's a good point. So you would say that like programs and setting hours for yourself is great, structure is great, mm-hmm. but if you get to a point where you feel like I'm not enjoying this, that then you need to listen to that. Is that sort of what you're getting at? Like, you, why don't force yourself to do anything you don't want to do?
See, that now we get into the tricky waters, right? Because now it becomes more individualized. So there are people out there, artists that have a threshold, and when they hit that threshold, and if they have a habituated response of backing down, then they need to break through it. And there's other people that you know, are doing the hair shirt, the self-flagellation thing, which is they're playing out the martyrhood, then they don't need to do it because they're just martyring through it.
So what do you look for in your clients? Because I imagine you have people who you work with who either fall into category one, where there's some scene they or some aspect of their work that they just refusing to go to.
Right.
Or part two, I'm actually more curious of the second, whether people ever come to you and they've been cranking away on and they're on their 15th script and you have the feeling that actually what they need is to walk away from writing for 6 months. I'm curious, actually. Let's start with the latter. Like, have you encountered ones where you feel like times where you've worked with people where you feel like they're pushing themselves to crank and it's really not helping them?
Yes, that is one of the concerns, is that I get a script, right? And I don't need to read the whole script. I only need to read like any 3 or 4 pages. Because whatever the writer's doing in one chunk of the script, they're going to be repeating throughout the whole script. That's just the nature of it. And sure, I can read the whole script and confirm that, but that's been done so many times that I don't really need to do it anymore. So to have a note in one area of the script, most likely 99% of the time, that note's going to repeat in other parts of the script. Because it has nothing to do with this. It has nothing to do with the script. It has to do with the writer. So of course it's going to be there, over and over and over.
So let's look at the first condition then. What do you look for when you feel like someone needs to break through something, and someone actually is being avoidant, and they need more structure in their creative life?
Well, one indicator is level of distraction. You know, it's like what's going on in your life. And if it's so individual, I would just look to see what's really operating in their life. And if is it an active way of distracting themselves from their creative process, or is it a habituated lifestyle? If it's habituated lifestyle, it's not going to change. And if it's habituated lifestyle, then I would want them to somehow leverage themselves into a position so that they could.
Break that habit.
Yeah. What would that look like? It could look a lot of different ways depending upon who they are and what it is they're working on.
Would it be something like what we did, where they have partnership accountability to write for 21 days, or would it be something? What are the options? Because I think a lot of people find themselves in that place.
Yeah. So there's high structure and low structure and no structure. So high structure would be, which is something that I definitely glean away from and I don't feel like I need, is nor do I want to do, which is every morning waking up at 6 a.m. and writing from 6 to 7:03.
Okay.
No question. And there's also
not pass go.
Yeah, there's no remedy. Like if you wake up if you are at the desk at 6:02, then you still have to do that session, but it doesn't count, and you have to start the clock all over again for 40 days in a row. Bam! How's that?
That's like, yeah, that you're the headmaster.
Yeah, that's headmaster stuff. That's like you know, why not, you know, sit at a little wooden desk in front of a brick wall?
Make someone uncomfortable.
Yeah.
That's like Zen style. Meditate staring at a wall.
That's right. That's Oliver. Please, okay. Can I have some old gruel?
Okay.
What?
So that's high structure.
Where's my 1,000 words? Get back.
What's low structure?
Low structure is, you know, anywhere from 10 minutes to an hour, anytime during the day.
Just you do know, something.
Just do something.
Easy breezy.
Yeah, just... I mean, really set the bar so low. It's like 3 minutes, 5 minutes.
You're just trying to get any movement.
Any movement, right?
Okay.
And any time during the day, you know, between the time you wake up and when you go to bed, like at night, not including your naps.
Right? Yeah.
Naps.
And that's more of like a momentum type strategy where it's like, let's just get some movement.
Yes.
Some hits.
Yes. Anything.
Some runs on the board.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pick your sports analogy so that we can sort of, you know, you're breaking inertia.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
you're breaking inertia by making it as easy as possible.
Yes. So okay. we can get to a yes.
So what's mm-hmm. no structure aside from the obvious? And how does it work if someone has an habitual avoidance of their writing?
Exactly. And well, that's why you want to employ certain techniques based on who they are, what their lifestyle is like. All those considerations come into play. You know, some people, you know, really want to be handheld. The other approach is to even take away the demand of the right, which is to speak into a microphone of your choice and then hire someone to transcribe it for you.
Gotcha.
And then on top of that... hire a ghostwriter once it's all assembled and help you, you know, give it structure. And then you become almost like an editor going, oh, this is good. This is not good. And,
yeah.
and you know, so there's a whole bunch of different ways to execute what you want to execute based on who you are and what your tolerances levels are and who you are naturally. Arnold Schwarzenegger, our governor or ex-governor of California, he said that he wrote a book, I think it was out like 3 months or 6 months after he finished his governorship.
Okay.
And he said that on an interview. He goes, I just finished writing a book. And I sat there and I laughed. I was like, there's no way that Arnold Schwarzenegger wrote his own book. There's no way. There's just, I mean, I'm not being demeaning to him, but he definitely had help. There's no way that he sat there and wrote every word in that book.
Right.
Yeah. Not happening.
Probably unlikely.
Yeah. High probability of unlikely. And yet he gets full credit for it, which is great. I mean, you know, I'm not, you know, it's his story. He put it down. But he knows his areas is what I'm saying. He's successful. I mean, he was the governor of California, right?
Yeah,
so he knows his strengths and weaknesses. Well, let me put it this way: he has a certain amount of success in his life.
Okay, so I wanted to circle back. So you, I'm a little surprised. I thought you would find, because this is not how you work. You decided to work like this for a period of 3 weeks,
mm-hmm.
and you seem to have gotten something out of it. It seemed to have like got you. Seemed to be generative for you. You were taking notes. You were thinking about what you were writing every day. And then you were going deeper into character.
Yeah, focus
for the second
attention.
Half of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What is your normal process like? If this was the structured experiment for the benefit of Adam,
it wasn't for the benefit of Adam. It was
for the show.
It was for. Based on our conversation, I tend to write in spurts, and I go for a while, and I leave it alone, and I go for a while, and I leave it alone. The other leverage is you can lever yourself with the use of a class. which is the same thing of, you know, having structure, accountability. But yeah, there's no other way that I know of around it, because, you know, if you leave it solely to just how you're feeling in the moment, we have enough distractions in our life that we tend not to do that.
When you write in spurts, do you ever get concerned that when you stop, you're not going to come back to it? Because I think some people would be concerned that they would, okay, you wrote, and then, okay, you're feeling a little tired of it, so you walk away from it for a few days, and then a few days become weeks. And, like, you know, like, how do you keep that there for you?
It comes into play in a different way, because if I write to something and I don't have any more energy with it, then that's interesting to me, because maybe I already explored what I needed to explore and I don't have the energy to, or the interest to keep going on it.
So you only finish things for which you have energy and interest?
Yes. Now, I want to be clear, though, that, like, energy and interest is one thing and avoidance is something else. So I could feign not having interest in something, but it's only because of an avoidance technique that I'm utilizing. So I have to be real with myself, too.
You have to try to remain aware of when you're avoiding something.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes I just feel tired of a project, particularly long-form work, where I've been working on it for more than probably 6 months, years sometimes.
Yeah, and I think it's real. I know it's really healthy to take a little break from it at a certain time, and in other times you want to push through, okay. Right? So it's training techniques. But and what was your experience of the 21?
Well, I want to say full disclosure, as a callback to my life, former life as a journalist, sort of current life, not really. I only did 18 to 21 days. That was because, as we discussed, I was on vacation for 9 of them, and I went 6 for 9 on vacation. As much as I tried to write as I was flying and whatnot. But anyways, let's say 18 for 21. I think I did all right, given the fact that I was on vacation for
great
9 of the 21 days.
Awesome.
My experience was that it creates the structure and the space for me to make interesting discoveries about my work. Like, so, and it keeps me going on a project. But I'm also in a weird place right now where I don't always want to write. And it's been the first time, really, like, where it's been prolonged like that for my whole writing life. And I've made, you know, I've had a career as a writer, as a journalist, and written creatively. Like, so, yeah, there are moments where it felt like, okay, I have to do my hour today. A little bit like going to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
But my experience is that once I'm writing and once I'm at the gym, like, I will sometimes start to enjoy it, you know? It's a weird thing for me. I don't know. But I've always been a little bit like that. I've always been not wanting to always go to my desk to write, but once I'm there and in it, I'm enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
I worked on new material. I got, you know, when I, the reason I sometimes structure my life is I just become pretty productive. I wrote a new draft of a short story. I wrote a 1,200 word personal essay in like 18 days. I mean, for me, I look at that and I was like, okay, well, at least that was time I've generated. It's the structure stuff is really helpful for me for generating new material. And honestly, sometimes helpful for me when I need to do edits and do a rewrite that I don't always want to do. So, a lot of people I know describe these structured systems as creating space for the creativity to come out. And I think that's what it is for me. And so it is helpful. It's a hard thing to talk about because, like, I have the capacity to be very disciplined, but I don't always want to be. It's kind of a weird place, you know? Some people lack discipline. I can be disciplined. I just sometimes get to a point where I don't want to be disciplined anymore.
I hear you. I'm very similar. I'm one of those people that can, you know, do something for 40 days, 100 days, 1,000 days in a row every day.
Yeah.
Right? And at the same time, How do you show up with spirit? How do you show up with, you know, a full spirit as opposed to just showing up mechanically? And sometimes you do show up mechanically, and through that you get to a spirit. That's what I work with and struggle with.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good way of putting it. You know, like, how do you show up in a way that's exciting and interesting and full of life?
Mm-hmm.
Versus, and the people I'm like most envious of are the people, not the people who put in crazy hours, the people who put in crazy hours, but it just comes from that place of just so excited to work on their script.
Yes.
So excited to work on their story. And yeah, I put in 12 hours a day, but like I'm not pushing myself. I'm actually just, I wake up in the morning and I'm aching to work on something.
Yes. So how
do you cultivate that? Can that be cultivated?
Well, I feel like the thing of like waking up with excitement is a demand, right? But waking up with life is something else, right? So if I have a life energy that's like, and if I'm truly present with whatever I'm feeling, be it I hate this or I love this, and showing up with that passion, letting that passion come out on either end of the spectrum, then I have a chance.
Meaning you're just congruent with how you feel about your work at any given time.
Yeah, because one of the biggest energy drains is being split, which is a conflict.
I don't want to work on this, but I have to work on this because I'm a soldier.
Right, exactly. Give me my marching orders. And so then I'm just executing based on a mechanical level, on my body moving through time and space without any spirit, which goes back to the same thing we were just talking about, which is character and characters, which are close to being human beings, are best for stories when they're in conflict. Because we want to nurture that conflict. We want to make that conflict even bigger in our stories. I think I should write, but I don't feel like it.
So in Josh's world, if you wake up and you're not excited to write anything, it's inadvisable to push through that unless you feel there's an avoidance of something.
Or I can sit there and be congruent and go, I hate writing, as I sit down to write.
And you can write and go through that door and see where that takes you.
And go through that door, because that's the door that's present and what's being real. The other thing is looking over your notes that perhaps I've made to myself throughout the day or the previous day. And I go through that and I go, what was I interested in? What was I tracking? And then get ignited.
I think sometimes it's helpful to return to like, why was I ever interested in telling this story?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the personal part. I want to use a music analogy for a minute. Do you have something to say?
Yeah, and the other thing about taking not only that project, but even why being a writer, it's like reconnecting you to your to your passion, to your dream. To,
yes.
What some people call it your, starts with an M.
I was thinking about your heart, but yes.
Think about your heartbeat, your manifesto. You know, why are you even here doing this artwork anyhow?
Yeah.
And getting in alignment with that.
And that's a good point.
To get in alignment with that can sometimes get ignition. What?
The music analogy is this. For some people, improvisation on a musical instrument, jamming, as it were, is incredibly pleasurable and enjoyable and creative and deep, right? Mm-hmm. Also, most musicians I know have to do drills. They have to do ear training. They have to do rhythm drills. They have to play scales. They have to challenge themselves to play increasingly difficult pieces. They have to do muscle training. Usually all those drills make their improvisational abilities better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think about that in writing, cause I know writing instructors who will often have made this analogy. They really do believe in that sort of approach to writing, that there's sometimes you have to do the drills to open up the door to the creative world. And it's kind of like this idea that sometimes you have to do things you don't always intuitively want to do to get to the other places, to create, to make the other experience richer. You know, sometimes you have to show up and take those notes and create structure for yourself in order to have access and do the really creative, vivid part mm-hmm. of writing better. Mm-hmm. And music is really clear cut in that. Like if you practice rhythm and scale and ear training, your improvisational abilities will just get so much better, you know? Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you feel like sometimes a certain amount of that is applicable to writing.
This goes back to get to know who you are. Like I feel like the body needs to be involved in the writing process. And I feel like if I don't do some sort of physical movement before I sit down to write, or even better yet, stand to write or move to write, that I'm doing it a disservice for the writing that I do. So, and that would be that thing of like warming up the instrument, getting it going. I feel like a lot of times those writing exercises just help me go deeper and deeper into my mind, which for a certain part of the writing process is great, and for other parts of other writing processes, not so great. So it gets back to know who you are and know how you work and how do you work best. Some people really need to activate their body before they start writing. Some people don't. Some people need to read a little bit before they write. Some people don't. Some people...
Yeah.
It also depends upon what kind of writing. It's not a one-size-fits-all, as you said earlier today. Mm. You got to get to know yourself. You got to get to know what kind of writing you're doing and also know what period you're going through. Also knowing like here's an indicator. Mm-hmm. Okay, we found a good one. What do you, the writer, always brush up against? What's the reoccurring theme? And in that reoccurring theme is something that can help you long term. For instance, I was working with someone who in every scene that they would get to when there would be a major confrontation, they would reach to the major confrontation and then the lead character would drop out.
Mm.
Once. Interesting. Twice. I'm noticing a pattern. Third, this is the area of growth. On the third time I saw it, I'm like, this is definitely the area of growth.
Okay. And in that situation, you feel your job is to push them to see what they're avoiding in these scenes with this character.
Right. Because this is not a character choice. This is a habituated writer's problem.
Mm.
The writer's not willing to confront whatever it is that the character wants to confront in the scene. And that's why I say, like, show me 5 pages of a script, and I can pretty much, you know, tell you where some of the recurring notes are going to be for the whole script.
Hmm. So are we going to do 365 days or what? Ride or die.
Spoiler alert, Josh and I are not doing 365 days of writing practice, but you could. Thanks so much for listening. Let us know what you thought of the longer content. You can email us at notesonyournotes@gmail.com. Thank you so much to Kevin MacLeod for the music we hear on this episode. If you like what you hear, please go to the iTunes store and rate us. We would love that. And feel free to share it on social media. You can always get links to every show at notesonyournotes.com. We'll talk to you next week. Have a great Thanksgiving.